chair, so that's an advantage. Actually, this session a few days ago looked completely different. I think the organizers had planned to do something like a mini data challenge or something like that to try for some to find some new physics in some file, which would have been fun, but that didn't get fixed all right. So instead of leading just a discussion after that, I was actually asked to give a talk, and I was told just before I hit the plane, so I had 3 hours of battery power, and then this is what you're going to see. So I will be talking about what I call the day after. We assume that we are having a discovery. We are not discussing background uncertainties anymore. We assume that's under control. We are not confident. We have an access. What do we do next? And, if you look at the day after, actually, on the web, you can find this. And so I should be provocative, which probably I am, apocalyptic, I don't know, and gut-wrenching, well, we'll see. Okay, now, yesterday was some wine tasting, and this is a slide of Joanne, which I caught from a talk earlier this year. Normally, if you're doing some wine tasting, what you do at the end is you fill in a sheet of paper and you give the qualities of the wine as you drank them. So this is the translation for several vintages of BSM physics, and I think Joanne's perfect personal appreciation of that, like Van de Technicor, better drink now. Some things have a very complex structure, sometimes are too spicy, and so forth. But there is a lot to look for, so a lot of signatures which we have to take in mind, and then at the end, if we see something, we have to go ahead and try to see what it means. Now, it's 5 before 12, I mean, since some time, actually. And so anything goes now. There are a plethora of new ideas working or coming out. And so if I see this list, I mean, it really tires us out a bit as experimentalists, having to adapt to catch and to make sure that we're not going to miss that the whole time. So it's really high time to get data, I would say, and get to business now. In fact, there is a historical perspective. What could you expect to happen? In fact, it can be that if we think of the SPS, which of course was sort of tailored because it knew basically what it was going to look for. There was a very strong prediction of where to look and what to look for. But there, the discoveries came very, very early on in the first year, actually, in the first miserable pieces of luminosity. They could already see the first Ws and Zs. Some later were classified as background, but never mind, there was a discovery. And they went on, and these things existed and ramped up. The Teveton had a bit of a different story, but so it had to catch up, first of all, with the luminosities before, but then, in this first phase, you also got the top discoveries, but even then, after some years now, a lot of good physics is still coming out of that, so it is a checkered type of history, but we should be prepared that at the very beginning, we're going to see something perhaps unusual. Okay, so now, we just observed the LHC, so there is a celebration, obviously. But then what? Can we determine what it is? Does a specific experimental signature map back to sort of like unique theory fixed a set of parameters? Some people even think that the LHC is just a discovery machine. It's not a machine actually that's going to teach us a lot on what the theory is behind it. I disagree with that. I think we can learn a lot from the data of the LHC, and we haven't by far explored all the possibilities we have to doing that. Even in context of a more narrowed, can one explore that? And I'll come with some examples of that. So we know by now, from the last years of studies, that we do expect these degeneracies to occur. That is not just because of the limited precision of the data. That's one aspect, which of course can lead to degeneracies. But in fact, the space, when you map back from observational space to theory space, it is not, in most cases, not a unique solution. But I think there are many handles at the LHC, and some start to be explored. These are new ideas of new variables, for example, to look at, to take into account the fact that you have two escaping particles and stuff like that, which we are starting to explore now, I think. In the last few years, there have been many papers around with suggestions what to do. However, many of these suggestions have not been yet put sort of in the touch with the experimental reality, and I'll talk about that. Okay, so discovery of an excess, so you will get more detailed information on the data in the next stage. what we try to determine when we can masses or mass-related quantities, spin or spin-sensitive information, which I think is going to be very important for classifying what scenarios we are, event rates, cross-sections, decay patterns, what's the importance of the third generation, often it plays a special role in new physics models, and so we have to have a so special look at that, and look for an special, perhaps unusual characteristics, maybe too many displaced vertices than would one naively expect, or non-pointing quantities and things like that, long-lived signatures. And given, as we learn on the way, we can use tools for looking for new signatures which should be in the data, which are predicted, which come on maybe later or are there but are not immediately recognized yet. But as we try to interpret that, there are some ways for us to say, well, if that exists, there must be an associated process which exists as well, so you should look for this and that. And this is important things which we can sort of prepare for. So even in the simplest case, as an example, say a dileptal resonance, suppose it jumps up immediately in the first months of operation, there is a number of interpretations which can go with that, with completely sort of different type of theories. It's a new gauge boson, it's a little Higgs type of model, Randall syndrome, TEV extra dimensions, ADD, and so forth. So you get more information. For example, if you see that, if you see a Z prime type of object, the first question could be, is there anything like a W prime? That would be very telling on what is going on. So the charge partner of that. Are there other messengers in the data? For example, in Randall syndrome models, you may have radions which are sort of interfering with the Higgses and things like that. They could be around there as well. Maybe a little more difficult to find, but it could be in the next step. Decay modes, branching ratios, detailed mass width, the couplings. There's a very interesting talk, if people are interested in that, by Tom on the LHC4FC workshop, which I will refer to. And, of course, one would say spin. That can already classify things here. But that, for example, will need a bit of high luminosity. And I just pointed out here, this is from the physics TDR from CMS at the time. So it typically needs tens to 100 inverse femtobarn or so before you can say something, sometimes just at the 2 sigma level of the spin of such an object. So that may not be the thing you want to wait for and then go and try to get all the other characteristics. Now, masses, while we have indeed, for example, supersymmetric models or models which are having weakly interacting dark matter candidates, escaping particles through that, we can't do the full reconstruction as such. But what we do know, and there is in fact a very detailed account of that in this report, which is now already 4 years old, but still it contained a lot of the experimental systematics and so forth, of using kinematics information, often called the endpoint type of measurements, of a number of variables which are in here, coupled to two leptons, lepton jets, two jet lepton, and so forth, and putting that all together to get, with high luminosity, it should be said, up to precisions of masses which are not sort of completely sort of useless. It's actually something which could lead to a prediction of, in a favorable model, it should be said, in a favorable scenario, of a prediction of the dark matter density to the order of 10% or something like that. So that's possible. There are now many new ideas around for trying to extract mass information and using mass information to resolve degeneracies here and there. And I think Konstantin will, this afternoon, discuss his latest paper on that came last week. But it is possible, and one can get information, even though you're in a situation where you cannot just reconstruct the channel as it is. And spin, that has been discussed in the last 5 years or so in trying to get, again, while we don't have the full final state, we don't directly measure the full spin of a particle, but we have spin-sensitive variables, and they can be very useful and discriminative between possible scenarios. And, for example, the spin, the spin sensitivity of such variables can tell us if we are in a bosonic or a fermionic scenario for example, these intermediate particles which we are measuring here. At that time, like 3 or 4 years ago, we certainly made it clear that that's one variable here, which is some asymmetry, which is built for masses of leptons and quarks, which gives works and which works in some circumstances, but in others not. that we would need more discriminating variables, because that is something which I think was a good thing for theorists and phenomenologists to work on. And in fact, there is been an extension on that in the last 3 or 4 years or so. There are a number of variables which have been discussed. There's a special session on that, or a special talk on that today, so I won't say too much, but I think this is very important. However, again, from the experimental point of view, many of these proposals still need the experimental checks, needs actually the experimental reality to put in and to understand at what level and when such variables could actually tell us on the spin properties. And for example, this is again for the LM1 point, which is the SPSA1, and it's the simplest point or the easiest point for the LHE just outside the reach of the Tevatron. If Susie would be sitting there, which would give us large statistics and good access to many of these particles and allow this master construction which I showed before. And this gives this symmetry variable again for measuring spins as function of luminosity. So with one inverse femtobar, you don't get very far yet. With 10 inverse femtobar, probably you can say something, and this is something with a larger luminosity. You can see that. But again, it's a favorable scenario. And if the SUSY passes are higher, so the cross section is lower, this won't work for the luminosities which we are actually expecting to get. Okay, so I'm saying there are new variables around to characterize what's in the data. And one which became somewhat popular is the so-called MT2. It probably discussed in the next talk, so I'm not giving any details. But what it basically does is it says, well, you have a situation where you have, say, SUSY particles decaying, this RP conservation, so these particles are stable and invisible, they escape. And so you miss your you measure your missing ET, but you don't know actually what comes from where in the missing ET. So what you do is you look at all possible solutions you're going to get for this situation you have here in this event, and adjust the throw the missing ET vectors to these particles in order to maximize a quantity of the transverse masses given here. And what you do know is that what result you get out is always going to be smaller than the mass of that particle itself. But like an endpoint, it's going to move to that. So on an ensemble of events, by sort of looking at an endpoint type of way to this, you can get information of the mass of that particle. And then you can get information. This can be extended, and there is, I think, we're only starting to explore this kind of variables and these ideas of using many events to get to the information for the masses, not just by single events. And Jay will later talk about that, and he will show that there are degeneracies which can happen in this missing lookalikes if they look at missing ETs. So I'll let him explain all that. These are a number of models which you have here. In fact, the model number 6 turns out not to be a lookalike with the others, although you would guess so, because the masses are the same, but the cross-sections are different, and that makes a difference. And that brings me to a general comment that if you have different spin statistics, like you have in Little Higgs and, say, for example, universal extra dimensions, compared to SUSY, which differ by spin 1/2, you, in fact, can use that fact, because for a same mass with different spin statistics with it, you can actually get cross sections in the Little Higgs and the UED which are like the factor of 5 higher than in SUSY. So the fact, if you measure these rates, that already tells you something for a given mass, what kind of spin situation you are. And that's been explored by Gordy and Lintau in the paper which is here. Okay, now the MT2 variable, this was the simplest form which I gave there. That is actually being extended quite a bit in the last 2 years or so, and this is all nice, but again, I think this is something where we have to see how well that works. For example, some of these distributions predict that there's a kink. If you plot it in a special way, fine if you see a kink in that distribution, but how that actually works in the experiment, we'll have to see. I do say that in fact, MT2 has been applied to real data now. I think last month, or it's not 2 months ago, the CDF experiment looked at this variable to determine the top quark mass, and it came out with a very reasonable number here on the precision. So there's actually good hope that works well. In fact, Tevatron is a good school for many of these variables, because the top quark, applying it on the top quark there, is actually, I think, a very useful thing to do on real data, if not for Monte Carlo.
Now, missing ET, I make one comment, and that is that we look at missing ET, we see large missing ETs, and then we cry often, you know, this is a WIMP signature or something like that. There is some care to be taken. This is also from the workshop in February we had, Herbie Dreiner, who showed that the missing ET can be large in, for example, RP violating type of SUSE. So in that case, it's not a WIMP, but you get actually the missing ET just from the neutrinos going in there, and the neutrino PT can be of the order of 300-400 GeV or so. So that even seeing missing ET is not necessarily equivalent on seeing something which is a dark matter candidate. Fine. Next point is life would be easier, of course, if there are special signatures in there to sort of classify the events. There could be large displacement vertices, like in hidden valley models, heavy ionizing particles and heavy charged particles, like in GMSB or split SUSE, gravitino dark matter SUSE, monopoles, stable particles that get stopped and decay with time delay in the detector, like in split SUSE. Something new we're looking at now is so-called boomerang particles. Well, what's that? That's a particle that actually, like a heavy stable charge particle, moves through the detector, gets stuck outside in the detector, so in the wall. At some point, we realized that with John Ellis that could happen, and we proposed that maybe we should drill holes in the wall of the accelerator and get these particles out, but they refused. So now we have a different strategy. And that is, if these particles decay, they decay isotropically, and in fact they may come back in the detector out of time. So you get something like muons coming from below, for example, through your detector again, and that's what you call the boomerang particles. Anyway, non-pointing photons, special showers in calorimetries, you can have unexpected jet structures, very short track stubs, like in particular models or so. We have to be prepared that these may be there, and they may be signatures. In some cases, they could be the prime signatures, but not always. Sometimes it is like in these very short tracks. You see, you have something like SUSE. If you would look for that, then you would say, maybe you're in an MSB type of scenario or a more complicated one. Okay, this is on this new signatures. Stop on that. Fine. Now, there have been attempts to see how well we can reconstruct back, giving a black box of new physics in there, and then releasing mostly theorists, I think, at that time, and phenomenologists on that, and try to get them to disentangle what is in that box. And there was the so-called LHC Olympics type of series, which I think the last workshop was in Princeton. I don't know if there was another one on that. At least they opened the box there, so I guess there was not much else to do then. And there is, in fact, it's still ongoing. Things are still ongoing. There's a different one. It's called the Blind Analysis Lyon workshop, which happened last week. I think it's driven by ATLAS, and you see somebody doing it at Davis Ruby Cube blindly. And actually, I don't know what happened there. This was a challenge which was given at the Lesouch meeting, where in a certain format, unfortunately it was ATLAS format, so there were not many CMS people participating, data. Of signal hidden, I think, even with some background, and you have to figure out what it is. So it still happens. I'm not entirely sure how useful it is, but I think several lessons were drawn from that at the time, particularly from this LHC workshop. And for example, this led to a number of people thinking on the inverse problem in a direct way, and to look at, say, what the signature space, how it maps back to theory parameter space. You could think of the ideal scenario, just your signatures map back to one, but that's maybe a bit naive to think that would happen, probably. You could think that it may go to a big range of areas, or maybe it goes to a rich area, but islands in these areas where this space would go. And in fact, it turns out that it is more this case which is happening, which was worked out for a full MSSM example, and they found that the degeneracies defined by a certain criterion were actually not too large. It was a good thing, like, say, a factor of 10 or 100 type of models you could get, which would be compatible with what you measure. There are other challenges that went on, or other proposals for attempts to map this parameter space. This was by using all the endpoint information, for example, by the Cambridge people. And by Gordy Kane, he produced something like footprints, which is you can take a look at variables
for example, the number of events where you have 3 B-jets compared to the number of events where you have 1 B-jet for a certain luminosity, and for different classes of models. These were string-inspired models, and then you see where they lie, and you see their separation. There's a bit of overlap, but you can separate them. So that is something which has been useful, which has been teaching us on what actually the separating power is for different variables under different conditions, and I think that's several papers have mapped that out. On OSETs, I will not say much because the next talk will be discussing that, except to say that, we heard a bit about it yesterday, we have been exercising that in CMS, and I think this, you know, this is a tool which is foreseen that once you have a signal, you're trying to interpret what the signal is. There is a quick around cycle in that between your hypothesis of, you know, what it could be, testing it, checking it on the data with these OSETs, and then finding out it's not quite what it is, so you have to be thinking of something else. It did teach us that we can understand basic patterns of the data, and also it sort of gives deliveries and predictions to check in the data. Now, maybe this is not a unique thing to do that via these OSETs, but it's one way of doing it, and there will be something said on that after this talk. Also, some of us, Bruce may remember, we did that some time ago at some workshop. We started on model characterization, on putting all sorts of possible variables together, which one could measure, which would be possibly differentiating with that, without actually doing at this point the full exercise and full study, how well they look, but just on the basic principles of what they are. And for example, variables like sign leptons you would see compared to unlike signs, for example, is different in these models, and by sort of flora of type of signatures, maybe that can help us as well as soon as we see something to tell us what to look next for. Okay, so also we are not alone. If we talk about LHC, what I talked so far is Atlas and CMS, there is LHCb, and LHCb of course in a way is complementary, which it means that it measures the deviations of the effects of new physics rather in precision measurements, for example, in branching ratios for different heavy flavor decays. How well that can match and help us in understanding a signature which we could see has not been explored yet in a systematic way. I will show one example where you see something, but I think that's something where some more work could be done in that understanding. But heavy flavor variables itself by precision measurements for factories, for example, are important and should be taken into account when we try to map out what actually the possibilities are from the new signature we're seeing here. Also G-2, this is what it is now, but there are new measurements being thought of which could actually improve the precision by a factor 5 to 10 of the time scale of 5 years, they would start soon to actually build with that. Now, how realistic that is, I don't know, but it's a possibility on the horizon. And there are the matters from outer space, from Pamela Hattic, Klaus Fermi, and so forth. I guess we have to wait until the dust settles there a bit, but still, that may be interesting. A new collider, I'm afraid not anytime soon. That may be a private opinion. So this is on the heavy flavor part. There is a heavy flavor and high PT interplay. There are now actually workshops foreseen on that, but as said, there is still, in my mind, not yet that what is needed, which is the systematic comparison. This is, for example, showing what the BS to mu mu decay, for which LHCb will be rapidly very sensitive, would have impact on M-Schugrad points, and somewhere here is the... the standard model value for measuring that. This is where the present measurement is, and this is where BS to mu mu would be for given M-Schugrad points in some mapping of the space here. So there is direct effects, but they haven't been explored yet. I'll skip that. Maybe I'll skip that to our game time because I'm out of time. Okay, so we don't know what we're going to find, so we're going to have to look at all the sides of it, and you know, hopefully not in such a blind way as here, and put the whole thing together and try to see that there is an elephant sitting there and not all what these people are saying. So it's important to look from all angles. I think there is still lots of opportunity in data exploring, which can happen at the LHC, in the kinematics even of what we're looking at. And I think this close interaction between experiment and theory will be important, if anybody would doubt about that. Okay. That's for the introduction. So, Chairman?
Yeah.
So, are there any questions to the speaker at this point? Good. Then we leave that for discussion. So I then ask the next one is actually Jay or Natalie?
It's Natalie.